Welcome back to It's an Inside Job podcast. I'm your host, Jason Lim. Now, this podcast is dedicated to helping you to help yourself and others to become more mentally and emotionally resilient so you can be better at bouncing back from life's inevitable setbacks. Now, on It's an Inside Job, we decode the science and stories of resilience into practical advice, skills, and strategies that you can use to impact your life and those around you. Now, with that said, let's slip into the stream. Well, thank you for allowing me to spend some time with you this week on our continuing dialogue on building resilience. Now, resilience is not at just an individual level. As we've spoken to in many episodes, both interviews and some of my solo pilot projects, that it's about our friends, it's about our families and our colleagues, the teams we work with, the organizations that we belong to. And so part of the dialogue on facing adversity, on facing challenges and uncertainty, and bouncing back from those inevitable setbacks, that skill we call resilience, well, I want to invite a number of entrepreneurs, business owners, and business leaders to speak about the challenges and the conundrums and the pitfalls they faced, some light, some very serious, and how they bounce back, how they climbed out of the hole and started their journey upwards again. And again, for each and every one of the individuals I spoke to, it was not an easy ride. It was not an easy thing. It took a lot of learning and self-reflection and self-compassion and understanding of what was going on in the internal landscape, that internal environment, through self-awareness in order to build that up. And it wasn't just a light switch. In some cases, it was a long journey. But that long journey, along the way, they learned a lot of lessons. There were a lot of insights. And those who climbed upwards took those insights, took those thoughts and knowledge and applied it, put it to action, shifted to effort. They shifted their thinking in order to build tenacity and fortitude. And they strode up that hill. So in today's interview, I'd like to introduce Knut Magnar Onestad. Now, after leading a digital development and innovation in the leading Norwegian law firms such as Kluge, Schjødt, and Arntzen de Besche over a period of 13 years, he decided to start his own company to maximize his impact on legal and business process development. Now, through his first legal tech startup that he called ETN, that's E-T-A-I-N, he got new insights on how he can assist legal service firms and legal roles and companies to work smarter, more efficient, with more insight, which in turn increased their business process optimization. And this in turn urged him to take more powerful steps to make a difference in legal service delivery. And from there, his curiosity drove Knut Magnar to involve himself more heavily in legal AI in a startup called Mygon. And from there, he created the Legatech consultancy firm Zebra Solutions. I reached out to Knut Magnar because I know the rough and tough road that he had to climb to where he sits today. And sometimes when we see successful people, we think, oh, they had an easy ride. But we don't really see all the trauma and the tribulations and the hardships that people have to go through in order to sit where they are at. And none of this comes easily. And Knut Magnar, in this conversation, he reveals, he's transparent, he is vulnerable. In the first part of our conversation, Knut Magnar talks about his health scare, a health scare so serious that he was actually on his deathbed, but in which he recovered. But in that recovery, in that health scare, that became a wake-up call that shook up what he defined as risk. He shifted his definition, and that was no longer a financial security, but about fulfilling his potential. And so for any of you business owners out there, business leaders, entrepreneurs, or someone thinking about this, I think listening to this conversation and Knut Magnar's frankness and his open transparency as to what happened to him and how it affected him is to take these lessons on board, because these lessons are sobering, they're real, and they are transformative. So I hope you enjoy this conversation with Knut Magnar. So let's slip into the stream.
My name is Knut Magnar Onestad. I'm a lawyer, but now I work as a consultant and as a manager or a leader of an AI company in Norway. My consultancy is towards legal organizations, helping them to create digital solutions, digital process support, and help them get better in that way.
Well, Knut Magnar, I appreciate you showing up for the show today. As we've talked earlier, just before we started the podcast, this is going to be a series of business owners and entrepreneurs and such that to talk about how they've bounced back from the several challenges that they've met in the last 24, 36 months. And that shows up in many different ways. And we've known each other for a while, and I thought your story would be super relevant for a lot of business owners and entrepreneurs out there who've gone through the ringer, who have struggled, who are may be struggling. And from a lot of our conversations, a lot of it comes down to mindset and shifting perspective. So I was wondering, perhaps maybe we could start with... Now you're sitting pretty well in your business, and what exactly is it that you focus on at the moment?
Well, yeah, as you say, I'm sitting pretty well. I have more than enough to do. I have a lot of interesting clients, and there's also a lot of interesting tasks. And then I have this AI company that's well, I wouldn't say my hobby, but that's something that I'm really I really like, and I'm really involved in, more like a passion that I put a lot of time into. So I think, well, like many have experienced that when they get into a space where they do a lot of stuff that really, you know, they have passion for, that drives them, that gives them meaning, they can work more than ever, but still have more energy and surplus of energy going forward in the day to day work and in their, you know, private life and the time outside of work as well. So I'm definitely in a good place right now.
I'd like to start at the beginning of that sort of hard road when we kind of crossed paths and then we started kind of moving things forward. Where would you like to start the story to rewind back for the listeners? Where do you think is a good starting point?
Well, I think I would like to start when I sort of decided to move from a sort of a safe environment, a safe job, more 9-to-5, where I got salary every day and no every month, and it was it was a very safe situation. And then I had a period where I got sick. And when I came out of that, I saw that I had so much resources and so much knowledge that could be useful to other organizations. So I think it's interesting how the perspectives sort of changed at that moment, where I felt that, well, there are stuff and things that I haven't achieved in my life. When I was sort of that close to actually die at some point. And that changed the total perspective of what risk is to me. You know, before that, the risk was, putting myself in a situation where I couldn't handle the economic situation and take care of my family and the mortgage and all that. And then suddenly the perspective was that, well, risk is not doing what you feel you should do with your life and use your resources in a meaningful way to create some kind of maximum output of what you can achieve. So that's I'd like to start there. And then I, you know, made a decision without really having a lot of experience in that. I've been working, being an employee for my whole life, professional life before that, and then I kind of just jumped without maybe doing all the right assessments and doing a lot of due diligence before doing that. So I jumped and started a company, as you said, with some other. I had an idea that what I had been doing in law firms for 15 years could be transformed into services for law firms. And we had some good success with that, getting contracts with the large law firms and, you know, building a business. But I guess it's sort of the setup was not right, and it was not able to support me over a long term. So, and then COVID came, and I was kind of alienated in a way where we couldn't get business. Yeah. We couldn't get things
so if I could moving. Just, we couldn't, if I could just pause the, you there for a second, because there's this sort of build up and then COVID hit. But if we could just rewind for a second, because a lot of us can fall back into the safety or the perceived safety of a 9-to-5, as you said. You know, you're a highly educated lawyer who's worked in a number of law firms. And, you know, as a lawyer, you make okay coin. But then this health scare came, as I understand it. And it was a wake-up call to yourself that perceived safety was only a perceived safety. It wasn't something that's to fall back on. And then that wake up call kind of, it shook you. It shook you in many different ways. And in a sense, maybe in a twisted looking way of looking at this, it was also a good wake up call because it kind of, it shook up your values. It shook up how you wanted to move further into this game we call life. Is that as I understand it?
Definitely. I think, it woke me up to becoming more purpose-driven, I guess. Mm-hmm. I've always, you know, that's been important to me, but within sort of the environments of the secure setting, you know, to create valuable work within that. But then I saw that suddenly that there was more power and more opportunity to have even more impact and vast more or a lot more impact if I took this step and moved out of the firm. And sort of my main goal was to start addressing legal where legal happens within the companies, not in legal service organization or service providers. So that's what I wanted to target.
And so if we just rewind back again, doing this rewind a lot with you, but if we rewind, at some point, obviously you had the health scare, you recovered from that health scare, but there was a tipping point. There was something that kind of opened up in you that said, I needed the shift. I mean, would you say it was a shift in your values? Was it how would you articulate that wake up call? You know, that moment that you said, you know what, I got to shift directions here. I got to go down this other road. Can you recall specifically what it was, or was it over a time that this happened?
No, I think it was quite sudden, you know, and I think, I still have this feeling of being a sort of a risk averse person. Mm-hmm. Sort of the perception of what a risk was, what the risk was, changed totally. You know, to me, suddenly the risk was not using my potential to make an impact or to maximize the impact I was making.
Yeah. So you in a sense called yourself out and redefined it, reshift the definition of risk. And you saw it as, and that redefinition of risk became the springboard that took you to take the chance to leap out there, to become an entrepreneur, to see what you could do with your potential knowledge and experience and that sense of contribution to others, other firms. Is that as I understand it?
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if we fast forward now again, so you started this, you started a business with a couple of other partners, and what was the focus there? I mean, you shifted from working for a firm to being an entrepreneur and going to a partnership. As you said, you kind of dived in the deep end without not knowing, having a deep knowledge of it or doing due diligence, but you took the risk anyways. You took that bold step into that arena. And how could you maybe describe or elaborate on that move you made with a couple of partners that you had? And what was the focus at the beginning?
Well, the focus was, we're, you know, like a lot of entrepreneurs, when they start up, are quite aligned from the very start. And then what we experienced, I think, is that we sort of drifted apart in what we perceived as the purpose of what we wanted to achieve. And that happened over time. And then, you know, in economic situations as well, that got tougher. Both for the company and definitely for me personally and my family. So that situation got into some kind of headlock, and where we didn't talk the same language anymore and stuff like that. And that really had a big impact on me. It really shook me. It took away a lot of my self confidence, my self esteem, and I felt at the moment, but I've seen afterward that I sort of felt really small and useless to some sense. At over time, I got to that situation where I really had little left of the power, the knowledge, the understanding, the energy, and sort of the confidence that this can contribute to build value in other companies. So that was sort of my personal journey in this, you know, how things played out with a lot of difficulties. It's really impacted me a lot more than I could see at the moment.
Yeah, here we are today speaking, you know, in 2022, and we have the advantage of hindsight, but that Knut Magna back in the day, he didn't have that. He was right in the storm, right in the middle. And so what did you learn about yourself when your, you know, self-doubt flourished in your head and your self-confidence tanked due to, I guess, a number of things? But in that moment, if you could rewind and put yourself back in that place, what did you discover about yourself when you were in that sort of, I guess, in that darker mindset?
Well, I think, you know, the biggest, thing I can take away from that is how vulnerable I kind of guess, and how easy it is to fall into a situation where your self picture or the self the picture of yourself really changes and becomes less worth. And without even noticing it in the moment. And I think that was the most scary thing I learned from this, that I didn't feel that I have had this low self-esteem, you know, but I can really see it now that I really had it. And people around me could definitely see it.
Yeah, because it kind of, in psychology, we sometimes call it the creep. It kind of creeps up on you slowly. Without you kind of realizing it, it slowly drains and drains until at some point you wake up and thinking, what's happened? You know, at least that's what I've experienced with many other clients. They've hit some sort of something jars them, something wakes them up, and they feel. Some of them say they feel the shell of what they are or a shadow of what they were. You know, when they look back at that point in time, it becomes a crucible. And, you know, one of the things that drives a lot of people to drown sometimes in self-doubt, where they lose their self-confidence, is that story they tell themselves. Were you aware of the narrative that you were telling yourself at the time that kind of tanked your self-confidence, that lowered your self-esteem?
No, I don't think so. I didn't even sort of have that perception of myself of being that low on self-confidence until it sort of really hit me hard. And I just knew that I needed to take action in order to change the situation, you know.
Was there one moment that became that moment that shook you, that made you realize actually where you were sort of psychologically and physiologically as an entrepreneur and a business owner?
Yeah, I think so. I had some people sort of on the outside starting to telling me this, and that made me sort of evaluate the situation and look at myself from outside of myself, in how I performed, in how I talked, how I related to people, and even evaluate my actions, looking from the outside and trying to, you know, see me as an objective third person. And that's how I managed sort of to see that there's something's fundamentally wrong.
Was it hard to accept that feedback that people were giving you there, how they could observe you from their sort of bystander's position? I mean, did it resonate with you? Did it make any sense? Or did you think it was kind of, no, what are they talking about? Like, how did you interpret that feedback in the initial moments?
No, in the initial moment, I just, you know, I couldn't understand them at all. You know, I had a perception of me being the expert in this area, and even, you know, nationally and internationally as well. So I didn't at all, it didn't at all resonate with me. It didn't fit into sort of the perception and the picture I had of myself.
And at what point did sort of that external feedback that you were getting from, you know, close friends, close colleagues, close family, at what point did you start seeing your inner picture of yourself kind of align with that objective feedback that you were getting from multiple points?
I was kind of forced to move out of the situation because of more, you know, the economic situation,
yeah,
and you know, starting taking care of myself in that way and my family and everything. I couldn't continue down the same road and in the same company that I had been doing the same stuff. So I was kind of forced to make changes there. Mm. And I think it wasn't before I leaped out of that situation and started creating a new situation that I had understood that my self-esteem was pretty low when I was, you know, really standing alone and starting to create something new, you know, from zero and going to one. That's when it hit me and I started to, you know, address it. And I think, you know, that's probably one of my strengths, that when I really see this, I'm very thorough in the process of changing it and getting things to become better.
In the second part of our conversation, Knut Magnar shares with us the recovery stage, him coming back, climbing up the hill again. He talks about two specific skills that he used. One was the ability to take an objective view or perspective. And the second is realizing the difference between the brain and the mind. And that separation, that the brain and its chemistry can affect how we feel, and that by changing that chemistry, we can change our perspective of the situation. In our conversation, we also address the idea of conflict with others, and how sometimes those conflicts can reveal sides of ourselves that we may not be so familiar with. It also made quite apparent to Knut Magnar where he shines and what he values. Figuratively, when the gun's pointed to our heads, that's when our real self kind of shows up. You know, sometimes when we have to hit the rock bottom or we feel we're at a low point, that sometimes that becomes the wake-up call that we need. It becomes the thing that shakes us to change and to rebuild. And that is never an easy thing to do. It does take it does take courage. It takes vulnerability. It takes to face our fears and our regrets about things and to bring that all up. You know, this conversation between you and I can seem quite academic, but this is something you have lived. You've gone through this crucible. It shows you your vulnerabilities and it's exposed parts of yourself, but it's also strengthened yourself, at least from my perspective, Knut Magnod, how I see the situation, how you've articulated it to me. What advice would you suggest to our listeners who may be business owners, who may be leaders, who may be entrepreneurs, or thinking of taking that leap and that risk that is involved? What did you learn about yourself going through the crucible of this experience to shut down that rumination, to shut down the overthinking so you could start to climb up again?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think one of the sort of techniques or ways of approaching it, at least from my perspective, is that I needed to see myself from the outside. And take sort of a big, make a distance and try to sort of be my own, to understand myself from an objective point of view, you know, and that helps me put into words what my feelings really are, you know, and also to minimize the part of my feelings that are very that's overthinking, that's not sort of the objective truth as well, and sometimes I could see myself, you know, as the most what should I say, the most unstable person, but seeing from the outside and just say, wow, this guy, he's really overthinking things. He's really emotionally out of line right now, you know. And that's what helped me a lot, you know. Just one technique, and the other one is, you know, when you really feel that you cannot think straight, I've always and especially now recently, thought that, well, this is chemistry, you know, this is brain chemistry that's doing this to you. You know, there's imbalance in your brain. So kind of objectify that as well and explain it in a way. And that takes away the effect it has on me, at least in the moment. That's one thing, and especially afterwards, when things, you know, when you say, well, this is chemistry and it will pass, you know, it will stabilize the chemical situation in your brain, and when it stabilizes, you'll see the situation in a different manner. So you sort of give it time to play out before you make decisions and move on.
And I think there's two things there you've talked about. The one is the reframing. One is to understand the mind, that, as you said so well, is that to differentiate the mind from the brain. The brain being an organ, and that organ, its basic programming is for survival. It's to keep you alive. And it does this through by throwing anxiety at you or depression or what have you, just to scare you from moving into that unknown situation. You know, the brain pumps survival, like the heart pumps blood or the lungs pump oxygen. So it does that. And I think you said it so well, those emotions, those chemical messengers, they can feel like we put on VR goggles and we're experiencing a different reality. But you shift those chemicals, then we experience reality in a whole different perspective. And it's to understand, I think, I wanted just to deal with that second point you made. It's to understand it's your brain doing this and it's the chemicals. Is that emotions are just like weather patterns. They come and go, especially here in Norway, weather's never stable. As most of us, our emotions and our thinkings, they're never stable. They kind of shift around. And so understanding that was a very good way, because then that allows you to dissociate or detach from what is happening to you to gain some objectivity. If we may come back, that was your second point. Your first skill was to to see yourself from an objective perspective. But if I could just challenge you on that more specifically, like nuts and bolts wise, how did you find that objectivity? How did you pull yourself to see yourself from a perspective?
It's specifically get into a place where you can be alone and close your eyes and just imagine to being that, you know, third person looking down at me, myself, sort of bringing the attention from the external point of view, imagining me being another person looking at me and really going in, focusing on seeing myself through the actual eyes of that third person standing there looking at me.
I think that's a very important skill that a lot of us who are struggling for whatever reason that life has thrown on us and circumstances challenged us sometimes beyond what we feel we can take. It's just that it's sometimes the step into the theater of the mind and use a skill, what you're talking about more specifically is something called metacognition. It's thinking about our thinking and to actually understand it. When I used to work with trauma per se, I'd ask the patient, or in this case, the client, to see themselves sitting in a theater hall and to see what they've experienced, throw it up onto the movie screen there and to watch it from that perspective. And then I would ask them, could you tell me what Knut Magnar is doing, the movie star on that screen? And so the client, he or she would use their name in the third person. Oh, I see Jason doing this. I see Alice doing this. I see Knut Magnar doing this. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a very good way, what you said, in that theater of the mind, to see yourself and to dissociate. And that's a really, really good, strong cognitive technique to find objectivity. And that objectivity can be what pulls us out of the subjective emotional storm. And it sounds like those two techniques, the objectivity and saying, this is my brain doing this, were two techniques that helped you to become more reflective and to think about where you were to make actions to go forward. Do I understand you correctly?
Yeah, definitely. I think, what you described is a more advanced technique, but with sort of the same objective and achieving more or less the same result from it, I guess. And then I know from working with you and having you teach classes in law firms I've been working and stuff. Mm-hmm. I've also learned some basic techniques that takes away the focus or brings the focus of the brain over to more to different areas like math and stuff like that. It will activate your brain's other centers and take away the focus from the brain on this sort of survival and instinctive thinking as well.
Yeah, definitely.
And I've used that both, to stop things more in the moment. And then I think the seeing myself from the outside is I've seen more like a treatment to start moving on, to understand myself and moving on, and not so much a technique to stop in the moment my overthinking.
You've always been someone that I've respected for having high social emotional intelligence, and part of when you were in that sort of darker space with your sort of first venture with the partners, part of it came down to not just the financials but the conflict of values and personalities and which directions you want to pull. I was wondering, how has conflict in these kind of relations affected your ability to think clearly and to make decisions?
Oh, immensely, I would say. I get really affected by disagreements and conflicts. And they tend to throw me off and affect me a lot. They really do.
If I just to challenge you a little, how does it affect you? Does it kind of throw you off balance? Does it Do you retreat into yourself? Do you become more aggressive? How do you see yourself showing up when ugly conflict shows up between, you know, business partners, which can happen to some of our listeners?
Yeah, I think, it affected my self-confidence, as I said, but it also made me destructive in a way, and affected me to become more aggressive than I perceive myself, at least. So both aggressive and feeling less worth, I think. And you know, I also feel this conflict in me that, you know, this is not what you were made out to do, you know, to stand in conflicts or to sort of be, well, I see myself cut out to construct and build something and not destruct.
Go to war. Yeah. Mm. So
I think it conflicts a lot with the perception of my basic values of being somebody creating something a positive change. Mm. I worked with development and innovation to make things better always. Mm. And that's what really drives me, you know, and makes me happy when we get breakthroughs, when I see people achieve something or when they use take into use or when they see things I've been part of creating, and to see that helps them in their day-to-day business or in the way they do business, the way they work, you know, that's what gives me joy and pleasure. So on the other hand, I guess, you know, the conflicts affects me negatively.
So the man that you are today, you know, you're sitting, you're at a peak, and you can look back on this journey that's taken you here, and it's been hills and valleys, hills and valleys. The man today, what advice would you give to Knut Magnot back in the day, in those darker times? What advice would you give him when it comes to conflict? Now that you can see how things have played out, what advice would you give to that earlier version of yourself to adapt to that conflict? Because some conflict is unavoidable sometimes.
Yeah, definitely. You sometimes get into situations that are filled with conflict and that's hard to avoid. Well, I think one thing would be to outsource it if I could.
Lawyer food. Lawyer.
No, that's, you know, if I could have a representative do sort of the communication situations for me, to distance myself as a person from it, then I think that would be better both for the conflict and for me. Because I like I said, I tend to get very emotional and going into conflicted situation with a lot of emotions will not add or will just add the emotional perspective, not the more objective that could be useful to have in conflicted situation to find a solution, I guess. So that's one advice. And then, you know, I did finally just say that, well, you're not cut out to quarrel or to destruct. You're cut out to create and be a positive force. So just let it go and do what you're cut out to do.
I think that was really good because, you know, first of all, I really appreciate, you know, the vulnerability and the exposure you're talking about yourself, because I think this whole process you went through, although it will be different from what other people do, but I think there are some of these same emotional hobgoblins kind of sit and work at us. And as you said, it's to find a third party to help negotiate so you can keep that distance, so you can keep the business moving forward, and to the conflict can stay in a diplomatic, civil arena without all this emotional mess. Though emotions are important, we don't want to get lost in the emotions. We want to use them as to understand the message. And I think the second one, which was really good to hear, is, and then that struck me, was to build, to come to terms for who we are. So, because sometimes these conflicts really show who we are, what we actually burn for. As you said, you are there more to build, to contribute, to help, to construct something, and not getting into the ugliness of what the war of words or the war of ideas that lead not to such constructive outcomes. So that crucible of the conflict that you went through, this whole business, it made you quite sober as to what you really burn for and what you really, really dislike. It made it very black and white, it sounds like. In the final part of our conversation, Knut Magne talks about the strength and the courage it takes to be vulnerable. That sometimes when we do fall, when we do land on our knees, that sometimes we need to find the courage to reach out, to ask for help, for that helping hand. And sometimes it's to get beyond the broken narrative that asking for help is weakness, or asking for help is showing that we are incompetent. It's far from that. Courage, vulnerability, well, it's about facing our fears and taking concrete and decisive action to deal with those fears. We also talked about self-compassion and how important it is that when we are on a rough road, when we are in a difficult and dark place, that self-compassion can be the light that helps us pull out. Same compassion that we show to our family, our friends, our colleagues. Well, maybe we should sometimes turn that light on ourselves to help ourselves out. Well, I hope you've enjoyed this final part of our conversation. Take it away, Knut Magne.
I think what was important to me was to talk to a lot of people and be vulnerable and very honest about, you know, my situation and what I wanted to do and who I am. And I've had people, you know, coming to me afterwards and that, you know, that was so brave of you to reach out for that cup of coffee. And you know, I just had to help you, you know. So I think that was of course, not many people do that. I've heard from some of those who I felt came out of nowhere almost to give me support. Mm. Some of them, you know, were in a situation where they could help, others were not. I appreciate all of them equally, but I think, you know, just reaching out and being open and vulnerable, that helped me a lot in building from scratch what I have today.
Do you feel it was very hard to cross that line? Because, you know, I think a lot of men especially, we have this sort of stubborn pride to, if we reach out, that shows weakness. If I ask for support, that shows that I'm incompetent, or whatever the silly definition we have of ourselves. For yourself, was it hard to breach that, to ask for help, to ask for support, to reach out? Did you find that something difficult, or did that come okay to you?
I think that comes quite okay to me.
That's a sign of a very healthy mind, by the way.
Yeah, well, that might be some kind of asset that I have. Well, I wouldn't say, you know, it's easy, but it's still not that hard and somehow natural. You know, I feel it's natural, that honesty and that to be honest to myself and even to others about that vulnerability, I think is something that I bring with me, I guess.
You know, because you sit on that side of the fence where you have that inner courage and that inner strength to push through that, to expose and to talk about your vulnerability and ask for help and support. What advice would you give to those out there who find it very hard to get past that broken narrative that if I ask for help, it shows that I'm weak? What advice would you give to others to kind of get over that, to write a new narrative that is much more healthy or productive?
all feedback I've gotten from being that way and from doing that in the situation I was in and when building what I have today. And, you know, I still find myself in situation like that. I've never, ever had any negative feedback on that. I've had a lot of positive feedback, you know, that is, you know, really showing strength, you know, being able to do that. And it opens up for a lot of win-win situations that you wouldn't get to otherwise, I think.
I think that's really good to hear, because it shows, you know, the feedback you got, no one was tearing at you. No one was trying to rip you or label you with anything. The feedback you got was very constructive and positive, and it showed a lot of courage. And I think that's what courage is at the end of the day. It's saying we have fears, but it's facing those fears and moving forward. And sometimes that is exposed to show, to bare our throat, to show our vulnerability. And, you know, people really, they connect with that, I think. That's a good way of getting over that fence, be on that side, to ask for help, to reach out for help. Because too much of us fixated in a broken, tough narrative that this is the way it should be, this sort of toxic masculinity, if I may call it that.
And maybe it's also a good test of who you should be doing business with or who you should be partnering up with. If you are vulnerable and they tackle and handle that in a positive way.
You couldn't define transparency any better. I think that's very well said. Let me ask you this then. How important is self-compassion when you're riding a rough road and you're trying to climb out of a hole to build something?
Not to beat yourself up too much.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's always important to take care of yourself. I think that's really, really important. But that's maybe the hardest part of it as well.
Well said.
And of course, you need to also step out of yourself to see yourself, and that can be also quite rough to see stuff you don't like and that you need to fix. There's a balance there. You know, you shouldn't just feel sorry for yourself all the time and dig that could help you dig your hole even deeper.
And I think there is a difference between what you're speaking about, self-compassion and self-pity. Self-pity, that helps no one. You just, you know, it's like a pig wailing in their own mud.
Yeah. So there's a fine line there, I guess, that I'm addressing. But you need to take care of yourself, of course, and make sure that the decisions you make are constructive and are supporting who you are.
And I think self-compassion is a definite skill that most of us learn, because a lot of us, you know, give lip service to it, and we show compassion for other people, whether they're friends, family, and colleagues. We will bend over backwards to help them and sometimes sacrifice and show altruistic behaviors to help them out of a tough lot. But when it comes to us, ourselves, sometimes we're lying in a fetal position and we're down for the count. And what do? We give ourselves a boot to the head, a boot to the gut. And I think that self-compassion is so important. And as you articulated, Knut Magnod, you know, self-pity, it doesn't serve anything. It doesn't help anyone. It just makes you a victim. But self-compassion means that, yeah, you took a hit. What did you learn? Get up and pick yourself up and start moving forward. And that might be, as you said, to show vulnerability, to ask for help, to ask for that guiding hand or that support that can pull you out of the hole. And it's to thank them, but it's not to take advantage of it, but it's to use it and then to move forward. So I think a lot of what you said, this is a toolkit to help people in with that inner conflict, because there's enough outer conflict. But I've always experienced, even for myself, the toughest conflict is dealing with this sort of internal environment that we call the headspace. At least from my experience, that's what I think is the toughest fight sometimes. I'm just respectful of your time, Knut Magnod. Is there any final advice you would give to entrepreneurs and business owners out there who are thinking of taking the leap to try something, or that have taken a hit and they need to begin their climb upwards again?
one of the things I would have done differently, at least, is to be more conscious about myself during the travel or the on the road from being that or in becoming an entrepreneur, because it's a big change. It's a change in your mindset. It's a change in your infrastructure around you and everything. So be more conscious about what is happening within or with you at different stages as well, to be able to make right decisions.
And so when you face new challenges now that show up in your new business that is thriving and that is growing, how do you face that, understanding where you've come from and what you've learned and the hard knocks that you've been through? How do you see challenges that come at you now, big or small?
I think I, take them more head on and to get them out of the way and decide quickly if they're worth it or not, to sort of fight them or to handle them in certain ways, or if it's, just let the situation go in a certain direction. And I don't feel this pride in being the one never to give in and stuff like that anymore. Think if it doesn't serve me, let it go. So I'm more pragmatic in that sense, I think, and also with people that don't help me move forward with creating stuff, then let the relationship end or
get time to move on.
Yeah, just to move on and find people and find relations that are real win-win situations on all levels, not only business-wise, but in creating something new and different sharing the same passions.
And one final question when it comes to the challenges, there are going to be certain challenges, certain change, uncertainty that pops up in your business life and your private life. Mm-hmm. And it will trigger anxiety, worries, concerns, self-doubt, and what have you. But those emotions, you can't stop. They bubble up. They percolate up within us. Mm-hmm. How do you process those emotions? How do you deal with the anxieties, the familiarity, worries, and concerns that uncertainty and the unpredictable can bring with it?
Well, I think I still use the same techniques, externalizing or seeing myself from the outside, and also the basic trick of giving it time and let it sort of play out without giving it much notice, and say, well, there's going to be a period now where feelings are just crazy. There's a turmoil and a storm inside of me, and my thoughts are going, I'm scared. I'm worried. I'm angry. It's going to be some time, but it's going to pass tomorrow. It's going to be different, and just to be okay with that, to let things just let the storm pass. Yeah. And then after that, sort of evaluate it and make decisions on which way to go and not do anything in the moment.
I think that's some really great advice. And that's not, something you read in a book. This is something you've been through, you've experienced it, and it's helped you to find that stability and that perch where you are now. If someone wanted to get in touch with you regarding business, or if they wanted to reach out for advice, what would be the best way they can get in contact with you, Knud Magnar?
Well, they could, hook up on LinkedIn with me and send me a note there. Or if not, just give me a call or an email.
Great.
I'm sort of kind of open to most channels. I do a lot of communications.
Well, Well, I'll make sure I include all your social media links and your contact information in the show notes. But again, Knut Magnod, I really appreciate you showing up. And I know this is not always an easy conversation, but I think a lot of your experience, your knowledge, and that tough sojourn, that journey that you've taken, a lot of people can learn a lot from what you've experienced and apply it to their own challenges and conundrums. So thank you again. I really appreciate your time.
Well, thank you, Jason, also for, you know, teaching me a lot and helping me out and having this conversation with me. Sometimes, you know, it's good to share experiences and look into the mirror every once in a while. It gives a perspective on who you are today, I guess. And this was an opportunity to do that as well. So I appreciate that.
You're more than welcome. Thanks again, Knut Magnod. I'm sure we'll meet up for a coffee at some point in the future.
We will. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Well, folks, that was Knut Magnod Onestad. And thanks again, Knut Magnod, for your generosity of your time and sharing your story with us. I think a lot of us can learn from your journey and take some special points from that. You know, a lot of the times when we are walking that hard, lonely road, we think it is only happening to us. And that when we look at Facebook feeds, Instagram feeds, and all these social media feeds, that it looks like everyone's got their life in order and ours is in total chaos. Well, that's not true. As Knut Magnod shared with us, his life was far from a picture postcard. It was a road. It was a road that was hard and long, but he learned from it, and it shaped him, and it made quite apparent what was important to him. It allowed him to sharpen his values, to sharpen his focus, and to build something that he is proud of. And that is the reason I want to bring more of these stories to you, to show you that a lot of us do struggle, but a lot of us find ways forward. And they're not always apparent when we are in the midst of the storm. But with hindsight, we see what we've learned, how we've grown and how we've developed. And to you, dear listener, maybe you are stuck in a dark, difficult sojourn, a road that you find is grinding and that is hard to constantly move forward. But you will find a way forward. And through the medium of the podcast, I will be bringing other professionals on, other people who are business owners and business leaders and entrepreneurs and people who are thinking about moving in that direction to show you that there are ways forward, that there are ways we can overcome our tribulations. Well, thanks again for joining me for another week. As I usually ask, please share, please invite others to listen, please rate and review the podcast. That's always great. And if you have any feedback, well, share it with me. I'm always open to it. I'm always receptive to your feedback. Well, anyways, folks, until next time, keep well, keep strong, and we'll speak soon.